busy one for me, brother.
Yeah, that's good. Busy is good, right?
Exactly. Busy is good.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Well, dude, I'm glad to have you here, brother. I appreciate you doing the podcast. I'm excited to chat with you. And you and I have only chatted once before. We got introduced by Sharif, and it's been awesome to chat with you the first time around. And I was like, man, you're in a similar space. You're in the creative space. Building courses and a bunch of stuff. So love to just kind of kick it off and have you just kind of give me a little bit of background on, you know, how you started and how you got to where you are right now. And you can keep it as short and long as you want to, man.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been a long journey. So I'll give you the Coles notes. Okay. In 2017, I took a certification that introduced me to the world of digital marketing.
Okay.
Off the back of that, I got an internship working with a sports team running their digital ads. I did that for 9 months. And then I worked for an agency for 6 months leading a project with a television network, helping shift them from television first to website and social first. Through those two jobs, the internship and the agency job, I would always document my journey on social media.
Okay.
And so I started getting outreach from clients, and I started taking on clients doing their paid ads. And then it got to a point where I didn't have any more time. So I quit my job to free up more time, which was the inception of my paid ads agency. So that was in January 2019. That's still operating today. And then in maybe August of 2021, we started the Modern Marketing Certificate off the back of me growing my TikTok, getting over 100,000 followers in the marketing space. And all of them were, 99% of them didn't own businesses. So I couldn't monetize them through my paid ads agency. And so we started the education company to teach digital marketing skills and open up a B2C avenue. And here we are today.
I love it. I love it. Well, I'm kind of wrap my head around this a little bit. So first of all, what's the certification that you took? And did you find yourself in a place when you took that you were like, hey, this is something that I really enjoy doing. This is something I want to do. Or was it kind of one of these things where it's like, I'm going to give this a try. I'm not sure yet if this is actually something I'm going to dedicate myself to.
Yeah, 100%. So I was at the University of Ottawa getting a marketing degree, and I still didn't know where I wanted to go in life, but I was very eager to find that.
Okay.
And by accident, I got an email to take this digital marketing certification, which was a partnership between a marketing agency and the university. They were partnering to build this certification. And the reason I say by accident is because it was for graduate students at the time, which I wasn't. And okay. So I applied and was like, hey, I'm still interested, whatever. And so they let me in. And through that, I started to get introduced to Facebook ads, to Google Analytics, to e-commerce, to email marketing, to all these topics. And I finally started to feel like I found something that was really interesting to me. And this was still 2017. So it wasn't like as, you know, regular as it is today. That was my first exposure to those topics.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was early enough that like I was able to, you know, really get my paid ad skills up right as the inflection point was happening, where like businesses were becoming more and more excited about diving into that space. So it kind of was a perfect timing.
I love it. I love it. Tell me a little bit about, so I personally never ran any kind of scalable ads for any of my businesses. I always kind of grew things organically. When you kind of got a hold on ads and different things, tell me about some of the brands that you worked with and the people that you helped sort of, you know, gain a little bit of traction on there. And what were some of those early kind of speed bumps that you ran into with Facebook ads or Instagram, whatever it was at the time that you were focusing on? Tell me a little bit about that and how that whole journey happened, because I know from as much as I dabbled in it, again, very little, I was just never into that space too much,
yeah.
But there's always a moving needle. There's always like the next thing, like what are people doing now? What are people clicking on? What's kind of the bait that you have to throw out there for people to come to the website? And coming to the website is not enough. Now you got to focus on getting them to buy something or enroll into something or whatever else it is. So tell me a little bit about that process and how that was on a learning curve for you as you kind of got into it and helping clients with that.
Yeah, 100%. So for me, I did start the agency as I had almost a year of experience in the space. So the learning curve wasn't like insane. I was already quite confident, and these clients were reaching out to me because I was, you know, sharing certain results that we were getting in these businesses. But what I really had to learn, interestingly enough, was like how clients want to be communicated to and how they want to be reported to. My first report that I gave a client, I would guess, I don't remember, this was in 2019, but it must have been 11, 12 pages long for the month.
Wow. Wow.
Now our reports are one page because clients just want to know most of the time, did I make money? And we let the clients then ask questions that we're willing to go pull numbers specifically for, but we don't do it ahead of time because a lot of times it makes them more confused than they were before the meeting. And so we just focus on what they care about. And so that was actually a big one because me being so into the space, I love the numbers. I love how this aligns with this and creates this, which leads to this. And these are these opportunities and all the data and the information. But I think understanding how to communicate that to a client who has a million things going on and marketing is just one vertical that they care about was a big learning curve for us. And then we would work with all different types of companies. And I think what it came down to with ads is we then realized we only want to work with companies that have a clear success metric that we can track. So for instance, if you're working with a coffee shop, you're not going to be able to track through ads how many coffees you sell, right? So it's just not going to be a good fit because you're always going to be debating whether it's working. We wanted to work with clients where it was very clear that what we were doing was driving a return, which made the conversations and the meetings very easy. And I think the other thing that we learned is we wanted to work with clients that had had high ticket, low sales volume, right? So we would rather work with a car dealership than a restaurant, right? Where a restaurant has high volume but lower ticket, because we found it a lot easier to produce returns for them.
Okay, and so when you take that comparison of a coffee shop, for example, what are some other kind of e-commerce brands that you would work with versus like working, like you said, with a coffee brand type of thing?
Yeah, we'll work with any e-commerce brand, but it's very important that, you know, 99% of the time we won't work with them unless they have 1,000 sales. Okay. Because we want to be certain that marketing is the problem, right?
Okay.
If they don't have that sales, then it could be a product issue, could be a website issue, could be a messaging issue, could be the customer support isn't there, could be a multitude of things. And even if we solve the ads, we may not drive the return. And so we need to know that all the other things are buttoned up and we can just come and drive the ads and scale.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. And what kind of, at that time, what kind of ROAS were you getting on some of these ads that you guys were running?
Yeah, like the ROAS is so specific to the business, right? Like our first big client was a CFL team. Where are you located again?
I'm in Sacramento, California.
So you're in California. So it's our version of the NFL. Okay. And so we essentially had like an NFL team that we were running the ads for. And so for them, we were driving 13x ROI without really trying because their brand was so deep and it was going to sell out anyway, right? But when we would work with maybe a local wedding venue that has a lot of competition, the ROI would not be as giant, but it's because it's just different dynamics. Like there would be no world in which you could do the marketing to get it to that place. And so the ROAS is really determined on a lot of variables that you may not be in control of.
Okay. And how did you guys decide, you know, was there like a spend threshold that you guys worked with that you were like, hey, you guys need to spend at least X amount of dollars in order for us to be able to make this work? Or was there just people, you know, did you kind of just take anybody on at the time?
In the beginning, you obviously take anybody on because you don't even realize that that's something you should consider. And then you have a couple experiences where you realize, oh, like we couldn't have even done it at that number because of XYZ. And so what we explain to the clients is like, look, our service fee is standard because this is our input, right? That doesn't change. Our input doesn't change. But the results you get will change based on how quickly you spend, because the quicker you spend, the quicker we can accumulate data and make decisions. So if you spend if you spend $1,000 in a month versus $500 in a month, if you with the month where you spend $500, it'll just take us 2 months to get where we could have gotten 1 month with $1,000. So you're just going to move slower. It's not actually like saving you anything. It's just making things take longer. But they would also use tools to estimate the market size. We would look at the CPMs of comparable clients. And then we would tell them, like, look, we believe you should spend about this much because we're going to get this many impressions at this rate, which will make us able to make decisions every 3 or 4 days, which over, you know, a 30 to 45 day period should give us enough data to get you to the truth, is what we would always say. And by, by that, we said, no, essentially, this is kind of our average benchmark. We believe we can increase it to here, but this is like, you know, baseline expectation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Now I want to kind of go into a different part of the agency, because as you and I talked about, you both ran agencies, you obviously still run one now. Beginning when you first started, what was some of the biggest struggles you had, you know, starting and running your agency? What were some of those early points that you were just like, oh man, what did I get myself into?
I think like at the beginning, you're a subject matter expert, right? Like I always look at entrepreneurs that actually don't know the craft and just hire the right people. I was like, they don't realize the blessing they have because they can't actually get stuck in the weeds if they tried. And mm-hmm. so I think the most common pitfall that everyone falls into who's a subject matter expert is they just take up their whole hours with client service and then they hit their ceiling and then they're just like, I don't know what to do now. I can't take on more, but it's hard for me to just cancel clients and lose money to build it the right way. And you get kind of stuck in this middle area of like, it's kind of a good life, but you know, you could go bigger, but in order to go bigger, you'd have to cut back a bit for the short term. And it's just like in the beginning, especially if you've never had success, it's hard to let it go. And I think that was like the hardest pitfall was understanding like, you know, we got to build this where we're not doing the service. We're managing, you know, the operations and making sure everything is running smoothly, but the service delivery is not us. Even if the hardest part, especially with ads, is sometimes you have a client which, you know, they have all the right variables. So after the setup, it may take 1 hour a week of like touching and tweaking, but you don't have to do much more than that. And even in those situations, you have to, you know, give up 25 to 50% of the fee to someone to remove your time, your mind share from it. Because without that, you'll never be able to scale.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. What was the biggest, did you guys have any big client like flops and mistakes where you took on a client and you're like, this was a terrible deal and we shouldn't have done this because the ads just didn't work well, their offer, their website, whatever else it is, just was a complete dumpster fire. Did you guys have any of those early on?
Yeah, I think a client type that we've really moved away from because of early day things like that is real estate agents. It's just so difficult because the agent as a personal brand is the variable.
Right.
And so you can run ads and do all these different things, but these agents are just so busy with so much stuff, and that you're not going to win in real estate on a good ad. You're going to win off building a reputation with individuals over time. And when it comes for them to make that decision, they choose you. And so it's just not a model that really works with like, we're going to run ads for 30 days and like blow up. Like it just doesn't work that way. And so because of that, our business model doesn't really work. Another one that breaks my heart is I'm a huge hip hop fan.
And yeah, me too.
You know, I advise a lot of artists, but I almost never will take on an artist because the music model is basically work your ass off for years and years and years, make no money, and then one day have your moment and recoup everything. And so it's not a model where like you invest, get back, invest, get back, invest, get back, and you build. And so because of that, it feels like a lot of tension of like you're just taking money from them in hopes that one day it will work. And so that's another one that we unfortunately stay away from.
Tell me a little bit about how you came to love hip hop so much, because I'm a huge hip hop head. And
bro, I don't even know what it was. Like, it's like the bug that bit me when I was 7 years old. I bought an Eminem CD from HMV. Like, I fucking always was like a hip hop fan. I had a Ludacris CD when I was a kid, a 50 Cent CD, D12, all of it. I just always loved hip hop music. I memorized like every song. Yeah, it just the bug that bit me in my whole life. Like to this day, like I still just listen to hip hop music all the time. And even at the end of high school, I made hip hop music. I was a rapper for like 3 years.
I love it.
But like,
I'm gonna have to dig up some of these records out there,
bro. Secretly, one of these days, like I'm just gonna, you know, become famous as like a personal brand. But I want to go on like Sway in the Morning and just do like the freestyle.
Yeah. Or Breakfast Club.
Just know I'm putting it out there. Exactly.
I love it, dude. I love it. Yeah, my first, I think it was either the Jay-Z Blueprint album or it was Eminem's Marshall Mathers LP. I think one of those were probably one of the first ones that I actually
purchased. I mean, 2001 and 2002 Eminem is just insanity. Like that era is just insane.
Imagine if he dropped that album now. Like he would be canceled in the first like 3 seconds of that album.
Bro, I was literally listening to Kill You yesterday. And I was just like, this is like so like, go to jail in this.
It's amazing. It's amazing how things have changed, like in the culture, especially in like in hip hop. And I always think about like comedians too. Comedians are kind of the only ones that are left, basically, that can kind of say whatever the fuck they want to say and make people laugh. Hip hop music is like still kind of like, it's still in that field, but there's still people kind of holding back on certain things. And like, if you listen to some old like Master P and different things, like the shit that they were saying was just like, you couldn't even believe it. You're like, you listen to it now, like you said, you listen to Kill Yourself, you're just like, what is this? This is jail.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
you're gonna go to prison if you release this right
100%.
Now.
100%. It's insane.
Who are you listening to nowadays that's kind of stood out to you? Like, are you a Russ fan? Are you any of the folks out there?
Yeah, funny enough about Russ, I must have found him when he had like 100,000 followers.
Yeah,
and so
did I.
Wasn't like super early, but I definitely watched his ascent. Like I found him on SoundCloud because What They Want came up as like on SoundCloud. Sometimes when you listen to a song, a random one just comes up next, and it was What They Want. And then I was like, this is fire. So I went to his profile and listened to like 10, 20 songs that night, and every song was like fire. And I was like, who is this guy? And so I became a Russ fan. I saw him in Montreal years ago. I actually rapped for Logic. I found Logic early. I found him when he had like 60,000 followers on Twitter, and in his mixtape eras. And I've always been a Logic fan. I mean, Kendrick, Cole, Drake.
Let me throw one at you. Tech 9.
I've seen Tech N9ne actually because my boy opened for him when he was in Ottawa.
Shit.
And so I was like, I was there and I saw Tech N9ne, but I've never been a fan particularly. But do you know who Dax is?
Yeah, Dax. Yeah.
I went to high school with Dax.
Yeah,
he's a year older than me, but like literally my first ever photo on Facebook in like grade 7 is me and his name's Daniel. His real name's Daniel. It's me and him. And so I know like he became close with Tech N9ne and stuff. So I follow Tech N9ne a little bit more through him, but, no, I've never been a big Tech N9ne fan personally.
Yeah, no, he's a crazy motherfucker. I went through one of his shows. He like paints his face.
Yeah.
And just,
yeah.
It's like, the best way I would describe it is probably like a metal mixed with like hip hop, and it's just like that energy. I mean, you're just literally there. Just like, I think you kind of have to be on drugs in order to really like feel the whole thing, because it was just like insanity.
I saw,
I was just like, whoa, this is not some regular hip hop show. This is entertainment. This is like
100%.
Straight up like get your blood, like your heart rate's going up. You feel like, what am I doing? Am I fucking on a treadmill right now? Like what's going on? It's pretty 100%. Insane, dude. That's awesome. I'm so, I don't meet too many hip hop heads, and I feel like I'm one of the few like in my era that's kind of like left around here with my friends. And so when I find somebody like that, I have a couple other friends that are just like really deep in it, and I just like, yes, I fucking love going down that rabbit hole with people and like figuring out like what they listen to. So that's
bro,
awesome.
there's a live video of Eminem's Anger Management tour in Detroit.
Oh shit.
It's It's like properly filmed with like cameras in the arena and stuff. Bro, it gives me goosebumps every time. Like I'll listen to it like once or twice a year and just like throw it back a little bit. Man, it was just a different time and the crowd is just insane. It's sick.
That's awesome. Send me a link after this. I want to watch that. It's pretty crazy. The music industry, I was actually managing when I was living in the Bay Area still. One of my buddies made some amazing music, just like hip hop, like club beats, like stuff that you would hear like Ludacris like rapping on, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And man, the respect for music creation that I got when I was with him in the studio, he made like all his own productions. He mm-hmm. like recorded like the rough like kind of songs. He knew the melodies, like knew everything.
Yeah.
Dude, being in that room and seeing him go from like nothing to creating an actual like beat, I was like blown. It made me respect music. It made me listen to music differently from that day on. Like everything in my mind about music completely changed. Like the respect I got for that type of art was just like insanity.
Of course, bro. It's so sick.
Yeah. No, it's but yeah, man, I'm glad to hear that. But so what happened with your music career? Like what happened there? Like
you just decided to be like, so what happened was the music actually led me to the marketing. And so I did music for like 3 or 4 years, had some cool moments, but like realized, you know, my talent in music was like a 7. Like I wasn't going to be more than a 7. And I was just able to be honest with myself. And like, I'm super good at writing, but I just didn't have like I wasn't able to perform it well, if that makes sense. My mm-hmm. voice, I find like if you listen to most of like the biggest rappers, their voices are higher pitch. Mm-hmm. And it's because mm-hmm. it sits above, you know, a low beat, which hip hop's typically mm-hmm. drums and shit. So my voice wouldn't sit above the record well. And I was like, I'm not the guy. I couldn't like sing. I didn't have like the melodies well. Like I could write a good melody, but I couldn't execute a good melody. And so but I did fall in love with the marketing aspect of like after I'd put out a song, like how do I get as many views as possible? And so that kind of pushed me in that direction. And I was just like, you know what, I'm gonna be a hip hop fan. I'm gonna advise for hip hop. You know, I love getting on phone with artists and just like telling them, dude, do this. Because I think it's funny, I think artists are very entitled in the sense of it's truly never been easier to be a big artist, and they complain about how hard it is. Mm-hmm. Bro, this is like, you don't have to stand outside of a record label in New York hoping someone fucking will stop for you. Like you just post a video on your phone for free. Yep. You know, like it's 100%. easy. And it's fair now. It's merit-based. Like if you have talent, you're going to stand out instead of just be right time, right spot and have talent.
Yeah, they're kind of missing that aspect of like that rawness. Like I always felt like that with my buddy as well. Like he wanted everything to kind of be like this polished thing. And I remember this was like, man, I want to say this was like 2010, 2011. It was like long ago. And I still remember telling, this is when YouTube was just making like, you know, it's like ascend into like taking over and all this other stuff. And I remember seeing people posting all, Wiz Khalifa was like the guy at the time. Like he was like doing all he was on every social media. He was a Twitter guy. He was just like everywhere. And I just literally remember telling my buddy, I was like, dude, I can guarantee you right now, if you get on, you turn that camera on when you're creating those beats and you do some crazy cool shit and you just throw that out there with the beat on it or whatever else it is, I will guarantee you that you will have a level of success that's going to feel like you cheated your way to like becoming that successful.
100%.
And he didn't really listen to that advice and always was like, no, this has got to protect this stuff. And I'm just like, bro, you're nobody right now. In order to get somebody, to get some recognition, like go and do this. And I just remember sitting there being like, man, I wish I can sing. I wish I could produce. And I would be like, you know, you're always in that different like mindset. You're like, if that was me, I would be doing these things. But, you know, you got to let people do their own thing.
100%. 100%.
So, music industry was a lot tougher. And now, like you said, when SoundCloud came out and all these people started like putting their stuff out there, I mean, it was so easy to get recognized if you just had, like you said, that merit base, like a little bit of that talent, that voice, the beats, the consistency. Like you click those things in, you're gonna make some money.
And like, have you seen like Connor Price?
Yes, Connor Price. Right. I've seen you. That guy Mike too. Have you seen Mike?
Mike. He's like this, Mike, like, Studd?
I don't know his last
name. Is it Mike, goes by Mike with a period?
Yeah.
But Mike is Mike Studd. I don't know if you know Mike Studd.
No, I don't.
He changed his name, but he's been like around for like a decade. Like he's been.
Yeah, I know that. But he's now like going the full independent, like doing everything himself, making videos wherever he's at, like just the art and being an artist type of thing.
Dude, no, he's dope. But the reason I brought up Connor Price was because he blew up in the TikTok era. Yeah. And he did it super right. He continues to do it super right. But he was just on a podcast and they said through like all their different revenue streams, just by like blowing up as a rapper on TikTok, they do $250,000 a month. Just by using TikTok to blow up his rap persona. Yeah.
Dude, that's crazy. Tell me about your TikTok journey. How did you get so many followers? Like, what was your game plan there? Were you trying to use it for something else? Or did it just kind of like, were just like, hey, man, I'm trying to catch this wave and make something happen?
It's a great story. Yeah. So my buddy Jamie, him and my other buddy Deepak started a TikTok agency in, I want to say like March of 2021, I want to say.
Okay.
And they took on clients and they were blowing up these clients, right? And anyway, so that's on one side. And then I was at the gym with my trainer and I was telling him, I was like, dude, and this was in August of 2021. I was telling him, I was like, dude, you got to get on TikTok because fitness content is going crazy on TikTok. Like it was, it was really the moment for like the fitness influencer on TikTok where like anyone could blow up as a fitness influencer.
Right.
And I was like, dude, get on. And he genuinely looked at me without like trying to catch me. And he was like, oh, like, what do you do on TikTok? And I was like, oh, like, I don't do TikTok. And he was like, what? He's like, you're like telling me like all this shit. And I was like, fuck. I was like, you're right. And so after that session, I called Jamie like on the way home. And I was like, dude, let's go right now. And so a week later, we did our first shoot. And then I've put out 2 videos a day ever since.
Even till this day?
Yeah. So we repurposed the videos now. I've probably shot over 1,000 videos. Yeah.
And your stuff, and I haven't even looked at your TikTok channel, but I'm going to take a clip out of this and I kind of distribute it across different like platforms. I'll put it up there. So I'll check it out, but tell me like, what was it, mainly like marketing related content now, or it's all 100%. Marketing.
So the thread, it's funny. We're on TikTok live right now.
Oh, sick.
Yeah, I don't know if you can see it.
Sick.
The common thread is that it's all marketing content, a bit of entrepreneurship content, but maybe a bit of mindset content too, but mostly digital marketing content, talking about like the latest updates in digital marketing, talking about what I do in my agency, how we drive results for our clients, and things I'm passionate about. Like I've done a lot of tips for artists, for music artists as well, just because I just like find it so fascinating. And so I never overthought it. And we would basically do a shoot bi-weekly and we would shoot 30 videos, you know, one session twice a week or twice a month. And that would be our 60 videos for the month. And so we did that for like a year probably. And then on the same time, I launched Modern Marketing. So that's another TikTok channel we own. And Modern Marketing, we do 4 videos a day. We post 4 videos a day. Yeah. And so there was one point where for 2 months, I was making 180 videos, new videos each month on TikTok. Yeah. But I became sick. And like in a 2-hour session, we could shoot 30 videos.
Jesus.
Yeah. We were just machining. Our fastest session, 30 videos in 52 minutes.
Whoa, that's crazy. Yeah. And what, they're all like 10-second videos at the end of the day? You chop them up into 10 seconds or something, or 15 seconds?
Yeah, so I got into this flow for Modern Marketing where all I would do is talk about websites that help marketers. And so literally I would just make a list of 30 videos or 30 websites, and I'll just click on the website. And I'd be like, yo, you're not going to believe this website. If you're a marketer, it does boom, boom, boom. And if you want to be a better marketer, follow. And like, boom, next website, next website. And I just click on it, read the homepage, and make the video. And like, and so like, just
bang them out.
Shooting, obviously. Then the guys would post produce it. But that, yeah, I had a big TikTok era for sure. And then I went to VCon. This was the wildest shit. I went to
VCon
in 2022, in May of 2022, about 9 months after I started my personal. And then we had started Modern Marketing the March. So this was like 6 weeks after we started Modern Marketing. We probably had 40, 50,000 followers already. And first day, I got recognized by someone. And the guy goes, oh shit, I love Modern Marketing. And I'm a Canadian. I'm at a conference in Minnesota. And a guy comes up to me and goes, I love Modern Marketing, a channel I started like 6 weeks ago. Yeah, insane.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's crazy, dude. That's crazy. Were you into the whole NFT game too? Or did you go to VCon for something else?
Yeah, I minted two Series 1 V friends.
So oh, very nice.
That was a good decision for sure.
That's awesome. Did you ever end up monetizing your TikTok channels at all?
Oh, yeah. We've done across both channels now, maybe 70 brand deals.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
We like That's there's awesome. One point on Modern Marketing. We do like 4 brand deals a month because Modern Marketing was built perfectly for brand deals because all we would talk about is websites that help marketers. And so we became like very trusted as like an authority for like if you're a marketing website like and we feature you, people are going to try it. So all these websites wanted to be featured by us. And that was like a byproduct by accident because we built the channel to drive our education company. And so we just thought talking about websites was – the most efficient way to produce a lot of videos quickly that were valuable. And it was, but then this became like a whole side thing. It was interesting. Our first year in Modern Marketing, 24% of the revenue was brand deals. And we didn't even think about it at the beginning of the year.
That's amazing. And how much did that actually drive into the actual business for modern marketing?
In regard to what? What do you mean?
No, I'm saying like, so was it primarily only TikTok or were you guys offering a service in Modern Marketing as well?
Yeah, well,
like,
Modern Marketing, we're doing it. So this is what happened. In March, we started the TikTok channel because on like May 30th or 31st, our first cohort of Modern Marketing was happening.
Okay.
So we had 8 weeks to literally blow up our channel and sell people into our cohort.
And how did that work?
We sold it out. We had 20 seats, but each seat was 5 G's. So in 8 weeks, we went from zero, did 100 grand, and we got 60,000 followers. And that also obviously just like kept getting brand deals until this day. We still do brand deals.
Damn, amazing, man. Congratulations on that. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Why didn't you start an actual TikTok agency to help brands blow up? You should have done that.
Yeah, but the problem with content, in my opinion, is there's no like I don't even know what the word would be, but the economics of ads is essentially if you know what you're doing in the start, you can lower your workload over time. And if you structure a deal based on ad spend, you can actually make more money, work less hours with clients. So I like the nature of that. Whereas like if you're doing content, you got to still produce like 30 videos a month no matter what, like the
right.
The kind of cost of goods never goes down. And so it always seemed like a frustrating business to me. And that's literally why I didn't do it. I'd rather outsource it, take a referral fee for it, and just like move on.
Right. Tell me, so you said you guys do about 4 brand deals a month. Can you give me a rough average? So just for people that like are in the TikTok, like what's an average deal and how does that whole process work of somebody reaching out to you and being like, hey, Hayden, we like want to work with you. We want to get your website up. Like what, take me through that process of like how that works.
My bad.
You cut out for a second. Oh, there you are.
Oh. My bad. Sorry about that. I was just getting a call. So I went in airplane mode.
Oh, I see.
We good? Sorry about
your camera's not on anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
How about now?
Oh, there you are. There you are. Okay,
okay, cool.
So take me through that process about how, you know, you're posting all these videos. Somebody comes to you and says, hey, we want to get our website up there. We want you to like talk about it, whatever else it is. Like take me through that process of how it works, like what that looks like for you on a monetary basis. And you can give me rough numbers. Yeah. You don't have to go any crazy.
And this is what I basically tell everyone to do as a starting point. And you can change your prices how you want. On TikTok, every 10,000 followers you have, you can charge $100. So in my opinion, that's what we do. So if you have 100,000 followers, you can charge $1,000 USD for a post. Now, if you have a super niche audience that's high value, you can leverage that equity and say I'm worth more. If you are the reverse, it could be lower. Like if you're a dance account, right? Like you're a dime a dozen, you're not as valuable as someone who owns like, you know, 100,000 marketers that follow you, or someone who owns 100,000 people interested in e-commerce, which would be even more valuable. And so that's just like a rule of thumb, a starting point. And so that's what we do. So every, you know, we're at 150,000 followers. So it's 1.5K for a post, but we'll do bundle deals. So we'll do a package for 3 posts, a package for 5 posts, which are priced to make you want to like go to the next level. $300 a month for a Spark post link, which is basically like usage rights for ads.
Okay.
And yeah, that's essentially it. We'll send. So what we always do is when they reach out, we'll send the prices right away. And then we say, if these prices are something you're comfortable with, let's get on a call, review your product and make sure that it's something we're comfortable promoting. But we don't even want to talk to them unless they're comfortable with the price, because it's just a waste of time. A lot of people think you want to like show price later and stuff. That's a fucking waste of time. Like these are businesses who are looking to do brand partnerships. It's not like you have to convince them to do it, but if the numbers don't work, the numbers don't work. They have a budget. They're typically employees that are working within a budget. So it's like, just tell them the numbers. I'd say 50% of the time they're like, cool. Yep. Works.
Yeah.
You know? And so
perfect.
That's how we do it.
That's awesome. And do you ever get like data back from them to be like, hey, this ended up driving a bunch of traffic to us? Do you guys get that sort of like data from them or anything like that?
Yeah. Sometimes we do. Most of the times we don't. And most of the times they don't know exactly what happened, because we don't do links in bio. We don't do we don't do codes. We don't do any of that stuff that feels scammy or feels like sellouty, because our core business is the education company. It's not our brand sponsorships. So we're always going to have our company as the link in the bio. So yeah, if they can tell what happened because they isolate our post, they'll tell us. But most of the times they don't know and they just want views. Like as long as it gets a lot of views, they're like, cool.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. That's awesome, man. Well, dude, congrats. That's a nice little business. Do you feel like you're going to spin off another channel for something else at some point?
I mean, I'm just focused this year on growing my personal brand, because I feel like I've neglected it, because it's such a time like intensive thing if you want to do it right. And this is why nobody does personal branding well. You know, only a handful of people do it well, because it's such a time intensive task. Because you can't outsource you, right?
Right.
And so, but this year, that's all I want to do, because it is the most valuable thing. There's a reason, you know, people who make so much money still invest in their personal brand the most, is because that is the thing. And so I'm really just focused on that this year.
What's your plan there in terms of like getting that going and amplifying that a little bit more? Is it going to be a podcast? Is it going to be TikTok stuff? Is it going to be reels? Like what's your game plan, if I may ask you?
Yeah, so I actually want to step even further back than that. I want to be very creative this year and like almost like try to make a personal brand that almost has like an element of like artisticness to it. And I don't think, you know, business influencers do that, right? I don't think they think about like, how could I make this super creative and unique and like almost like thoughtful? And so for me, the way I see it is I actually want to keep the canvas blank and open. And what I want to do is I have my videographer and I just need a social media manager. And essentially every single Friday, we're going to have a meeting where we look at my next week. And we go, cool, how are we going to pull 5 posts out of next week? Will it be two photos, three videos? You know, you'll come to this event, try to get this type of clip. We'll sit down, do this type of clip. We'll go out on the street, get this photo. Like, game plan next week, shoot it, and then use that content to post the following week while also doing another Friday meeting for the next week. But what the Friday meeting does is it allows you to, in real time, think of what you want to do and make it unique. Not be like, okay, cool, like we just do tips on Tuesdays and fucking this on that. And it becomes so formulaic and like over time boring. The best creators, if they keep doing the same thing, no matter what, they become less interesting. And so yep. I want to keep a model where we're constantly evolving because of just the structure of it. Every Friday, it's like, cool. These are like, basically I'm structuring my brand with like love and proof is the concept, where it's like 50% of the posts have to prove I know what I'm doing, I know what I'm talking about. And 50% of the posts have to make people fall in love with me. And if the posts do both at the same time, that's great. But okay. That's how you structure it. And then with that in mind as the guiding light, then you go into, okay, how are we going to get 50% next week of this? How are we going to get 50% of this? Pictures, videos, how do we see it? And then just like go do it.
Nice. Nice. That's awesome, man. I like that. I like that. I like the way you're zeroing in on that and focusing in on that. And is the monetization piece of it down the road? It doesn't obviously happen right away. Are you planning on using your personal brand to drive things through modern marketing courses, or is it just strictly going to be like, hey, I'm going to put some personal courses out there regarding, you know, whatever I'm working on or things that work for me, or I don't know, maybe a TikTok course down the road. Yeah. Like what's kind of the plan there?
Well, that's it. It's like, it's going to push to my agency for marketing okay. services, B2B. And then it's going to push to modern marketing, B2C. And then we're going to continue to evolve the modern marketing product in real time. So as things change in the digital marketing landscape, we're going to create new courses. But also, I want to do this concept where bi-weekly we do a live webinar or a live Zoom or whatever with an expert based on like something that's happened, right? So TikTok okay. Live right now is cooking. TikTok Live is on fire. I want to find someone who does TikTok Live incredibly and like have them on. And that would be the live webinar this Saturday for modern marketing people in the email list. And so that's, you know, just obviously the surface, but that's how I see it, is like my personal brand will drive the businesses, because that the missing link for a lot of people is trust. Like a lot of people, mm-hmm. like they understand what you're saying, but they don't trust you. And so I need to build that trust through the personal brand, so that the sales on each side of the two companies are easy.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I just think sometimes I feel like people do, like I made a mistake when I built my agency, and this was back in like 2016, 17, 18, yeah. Where I focused strictly like create the business, build the business up, the business is the brand, like all this other yeah. stuff. Realizing afterwards the value, if I had done personal brand, built the business, built a SaaS product, built course, built this, then it would have just been like whatever comes underneath. There's already a level of trust because I've serviced people, I've sold them things, I've done this, I've posted stuff that I know.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I caught myself a little bit, like a couple of years ago when I started writing a little bit more online, is just yeah. realizing how important, like you said, that personal brand, no matter how much money some of these people have out there, even like the Tom Brady's or whoever you want to talk about, they are still building their personal brand, and that's at the forefront of everything else that they have going on. There's nothing. Yeah. So I can't agree with that more, that the value of that is truly. And are you so on your end, is it going to be a lot more, are you planning on doing a lot more like video stuff because of the trust side of things? Because I feel like that's also another lever of like people trusting you when they can hear you talking, when they can hear, like see the person and this whole thing. Or is it going to be, like you said earlier, you're pretty good at writing. Like, is it going to be kind of a mix of both, or do you have a kind of a goal to go, you know, one way or another a little bit more?
Yeah. Once again, like coming back to the Friday meetings, the blank canvases, it's right. not going to be, that will not be the thing that matters of like, how are we going to, in the sense of like, there's going to be no hard rule of like, hey, 25% is going to be written, 25% is going to be yeah. photos, 50% is going to be video. Like, it's going to be like, yo, next week, what are we doing? How can we hit these pillars best? and through which medium of communication will work the best for that. So if it's like the anniversary of something for me, maybe I would write a post about it in like a couple paragraphs. If I just finished a book, maybe I'll take a photo in like a cool like place, maybe in the office, holding it, and then write the lessons I learned from that book. If I'm at a conference and I'm talking to someone, I'll shoot a video and like, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
I want to be basically like an artist with an open canvas of like how we do it each week with like the pillars of love and proof as the 50% balance, and looking at my week and looking at what the natural integrations into that week would be.
Nice. I like that. I like that. A little bit more spontaneity rather than planning in terms of like when it comes to the long-term side of things.
100%. Because I feel like I feel like if you do it the other way, you're just boxing yourself in. Like, and I think people like want to see, like they don't want to see your content and feel like they've seen it before. I feel like if you surprise them every time, it's like it's exciting. They look forward to seeing what you're up to next.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense, man. I love it. I love what you're doing. I love all the things you're building. I'm impressed by your TikTok side of things. That's really cool that you're just able to kind of ramp those things up and shoot so many videos and so much content. And so what's the next plan outside of like the personal brand stuff we just talked about? What else you got going on that you're looking to kind of amplify, or things you're working on in the background that you're excited about? Is there a book on the way? Is there anything like that?
I mean, if you want a left field one, like on a real like self-awareness journey, I do different practices every single day to like accumulate a lot of data on myself.
Tell me more about that.
Yeah, like, so I got the Oura Ring, which gives me all my health data. So that's already, and I've been cooking that since May, I think I got it. So it's almost been a year of like collecting the health data. And then every single day I rate my life on a scale of 1 to 10 in four categories: how I feel about my life, how I feel about my work, how I feel about my health, and how I feel energetically. And beside each of those ratings, I write a note as to why I gave that rating. And then I keep other things like, did I go to the gym? Did I hit water intake goal? Did I get outside? Like just yes, no boxes. And then I'm in the process of building my own GPT, which will integrate this sheet and produce me monthly reports with my my biometric data integrated as well, to try to triangulate and essentially tell me like, hey, you know, you rated your life at these scales when you had this level of sleep, or you know, you missed the gym twice, or like use AI to basically synthesize everything I'm putting in using the quantitative scores to help it evaluate what's good and bad. And basically spit out a monthly report of like, this is what you should work on, this is what you should work on. And then I'm going to constantly feed it every single day, and it'll just be a constant evolution, improving myself to feel my best, right? Like, we're optimizing for feel. That's the key here. It's not optimizing for like maximizing revenue or any of this shit. It's like, right, I want to feel my best every single day.
Because when you're feeling your best, you could do your best work, which ends up being best to other people, which end up paying for that stuff. And it's all just like a cycle that comes out.
But like
the core, of it is you.
Not even, bro. Because when you're feeling your best, you're feeling your best. Like, that's what life's about, is to wake up and be feeling good. Like, you know, if everything else is working, but I wake up and I'm fucking just drained and dead and like not excited, and like, sure, the business is growing and people are getting paid and whatever, but like, that's a shit life. That's what traps a lot of people. That's what traps a lot of people. And so for me, I'm optimizing to rate tens every day.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, dude. I love that goal, man. I've been on a similar journey with my fitness and everything that I'm doing. Basically just whether it's yoga and lifting. I did double days today, cold plunge, fucking reading every day now. I started a new habit. Like, I just little improvements, you know, just every single day, like those 1 to 2% of like, hey, just do this today. And the biggest thing across the needle that threads all of those things together for me. And this is why, for me, consistency has always been like this the biggest topic that I could throw anywhere on any wall is like consistency across all those things, because what's the use of going to a gym once a week? In my opinion, that's bullshit. Like you're going, but you're not really doing much for your, like, you need to get that repetition. You need to get your mind right. You need to get excited about it. And I'm really glad you brought that up in terms of self-awareness and all those things, because I can tell how much better I feel. And that's one thing, dude, I was actually from 2011 to literally last year, I guess, I don't know. I was vegan for like 12 years.
Wow.
And I started doing a lot of working out, a lot of fitness, a lot of these different things. And I just, like, I've always been very connected with my body. And I just kind of started feeling this thing of like, I really want to like start eating meat again. Like I want to get my body what it needs. Like I felt like my strength was like weakening, whatever that is, you know, my mind was just telling me certain things. And dude, I can't tell you how much better I feel like eating meat, eating clean stuff, like just really, really diving into that part of my life so much more. And everything around that is just being amplified. And like that feeling of waking up and being like, dude, I feel fucking good. I can go take a walk. I'm going to go work out. I'm going to go swimming. I would do whatever I need to do to feel my best. That's literally what I'm focused on. So 100%. I'm so glad you fucking brought that up, dude.
100%. And I feel like it's becoming very socially conscious. Like so many people are doing saunas and ice baths and thinking about how they're eating and the products they're buying. And it's beautiful. It's really beautiful to see the world naturally moving to that direction.
Yeah. And not just being sold by the shit that we see on TV, all the fucking like bullshit foods and all that stuff. It's crazy.
That's it. Like me and my partner are literally, you know, trying to change everything, like one thing a week to like a healthy version. Right. So as silly as it sounds, we just changed our floss to like an all natural floss, you know?
Mm-hmm. We did that with toothpaste like 2 months ago, dude.
That's it. That's it. And so it's like step by step, because you start to realize like, holy shit, like there's a lot of things that I purchased that are integrated into my life. And so like trying to, you know, even just like drinking out of a plastic water bottle versus a glass one, like simple things like that, you know? I'm trying to get that reverse osmosis system hooked up in the condo soon.
I love it. I love it. My friends just got that at their house, actually. It's really interesting. Like the fucking water is constantly spinning and shit. Like it's crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah, dude. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Hayden, this was a pleasure, man. I'm glad we got connected. I'm glad I got you on the podcast. And man, I'll definitely have you back on whenever you want to come on and chat about anything, music, whatever else it is, dude. I love hearing about people's journey and how you got to where you are and all that stuff. So tell people where they can, you know, follow you or get to know you a little bit more, or whatever else you want to drop.
Yeah, Hayden Cashin on TikTok, Hayden.Cashin on Instagram, and then Modern Marketing on TikTok is probably the best channels. If you want to talk to me, Instagram DM is the best way to do that.
Beautiful, beautiful. Awesome. Hayden, well, thank you, brother. I appreciate you being on and look forward to chatting again soon.
Cheers, D. Thank you.